This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Welcome to the next installment of this special series brought to you by Place to Be Nation's main event and PlaceToBeNation.com as we here take a look at our continuing recap of our top 100 greatest WWE superstars of all time. I am your co-host, Scott Criscolo, co-host of Place to Be Nation's main event. And of course, Place to Be Nation started this. I don't want to go too deep into it. We've already talked about it in the first couple episodes. Place to Be Nation back in May decided to do a huge greatest WWE wrestler of all time. Not a tournament, but a top 100 list. And we asked you, Place to Be Nation, to give us your ballots. We got 118 of them and tabulated them. And on PlaceToBeNation.com, you could see the final tally and the cumulative top 100. Well, a lot of the great shows here at PlaceToBeNation.com have decided to reveal their specific top 100s, including us. So why don't I bring in my co-host on Place to Be Nation's main event. He's also co-host of the Kings of Sport and a myriad of other shows as well. The Godfather, Nate Milton.
I do not do this list because you ask me to, colonizer. I do it because I want to.
I knew you were going to quote it. Colonizer.
What's going on, brother? I'm still, I know the movie's been out for about a month now, but I'm still in that Wakandan spirit from seeing Black Panther, so forgive me if I slip in and out every now and then.
Oh, not at all. I saw it and I thought it was awesome. I was saying to, and this will sound sexist, but whatever. I don't think there was one ugly woman in that movie. I think every woman in that movie was a smoke show. The sister, the girlfriend, the general. The general's the hottest of them all. Even Angela Bassett looked pretty good.
I was going to say, Angela Bassett, for whatever age she is, Angela Bassett's still looking good.
She's looking great. Anyway, check out Black Panther overall. I'm half kidding. But the dialogue was great. The action was great. It was just a great movie. I highly recommend it. The last step before we head to Infinity War.
Yes, so. The go-home show for before
that is right. Yes, the go-home SmackDown. That's a good way to put it. Brother
Nate. So what you're saying is we just needed Shane McMahon to come out at the end.
Yes, exactly.
Instead of spoiler alert, instead of Bucky coming out at the end, we needed Shane McMahon.
Yeah, exactly. Shane with no arms. It'd be very interesting. Anyway, Brother Nate, as we have done in this in the first two parts of this 10-part series, you and I have revealed our top 100 greatest WWE superstars of all time. So hopefully you've checked out parts 1 and 2. So this is part 3. So in this episode, you and I will reveal our numbers 80 to 71. And we've had some pretty good feedback on our first two parts. We've had some interesting names. We're still kind of in that phase where we're revealing guys that some may have, some may not have. Or we have too low, or you have too high, or I have too high.
I think once we get to the top 50, the list will probably start to crystallize a bit, but I think we're still, in that weird patch where you've got, a lot of personal preferences and maybe, somebody that I have low on my list that you might have super high or not even at all on your list.
Yeah, well, I've already gotten my share of junk for not having AJ Styles on my list. So what I'm doing is, in honor of him, I do have his collection list playing in here in Studio B. So I'm actually watching his debut when he debuted at the 2016 Royal Rumble. So I feel bad, and I apologize.
That's a great debut, like one of the best in recent memory.
I agree 100%. You are absolutely right, sir. So we are going to count down our 80 to 71 of our two lists, and then what we are going to do is we are going to reveal to you what the PlaceToBeNation.com official list is. Now, just to recap, and I try to be clear about this, this list was not made by staff members or anything. This isn't like the official website list. This is the cumulative top 100 list based on all 118 ballots that came in from you, PlaceToBeNation.com. So you made this list, and we're going to compare each number to what Brother Nate and I have on ours. So I'll give my 80, he'll give his 80, and then we'll give the official tally 80 and see how they look and see if we've gotten guys so far and who we haven't seen yet, etc. So you obviously know if you've been listening to the first two parts, you know what we're about to do, so I don't have to go any further. All right. Let us go to number 80 on our list. And my number 80 is a guy that I've watched a lot of on the network, and not just his WWE stuff, but his overall stuff in his career. And he has impressed me immensely because of his ability as a good heel, ability to move around the ring for a guy that size. My number 80 from Atlantic City, New Jersey, the condominium with legs, or the walking delicatessen, as Gorilla Monsoon used to call him, my number 80 is King Kong Bundy.
Ooh.
All right? Bundy's a guy who was an awesome heel in his time in WWE, of course, earned a world title shot in the big show in 1986, WrestleMania II, and still had a lot of usefulness into 1988, which a lot of people don't realize. A lot of people think he fizzled out after the midget match at WrestleMania III, but he hung around and did his job, and he left probably mid-88. But he was a great heel. And let me tell you something. If you watch a lot of MSG house shows, Nate, this guy took a lot of good bumps for somebody who was 450-something pounds. He was not chopped liver in that aspect. And I think he's a guy that should be remembered fondly in the Federation era as easily one of the greatest heels of all time, and certainly one of the more mobile big men of all time. So my number 80 is King Kong Bundy. What do you think?
Okay. I like that. I like that a lot. I think King Kong Bundy is somebody who often gets overlooked, particularly the further away from his era that we get. And yeah, to me, as somebody that grew up in the 80s, he was, you know, not only was he somebody that I often saw on TV, but I think he was one of the first action figures I had. I think he might have been one of the old Galoob figures.
Yep. Oh yeah. Yep.
Shout out to Galoob. Yep. If they're still in business. But yeah, he was somebody that was always present. Like you said, I think he was underrated in the ring, and for a big dude, he could do a lot. And so yeah, I think that's a good number 80.
Okay, so that is my number 80. All right, brother, you're up. You're number 80.
All right, my number 80 is a big dude in his own right, not nearly as big as Bundy, but by some people's standards, and you know, we're not into body shaming on this podcast, but some people would say that he's a little overweight, but that's okay because he's still a great wrestler. This man is a former Universal champ, a two-time Intercontinental champ, and a three-time U.S. champion. My number 80, Scotty, is none other than KO Kevin Owens.
Wow. Okay. Somebody, a new era guy. All right. I'm game. Go ahead. Lay it on me.
Yeah, and for me, I think there's a lot of positives about Kevin Owens. You know, he's great on the mic. He's really solid in the ring. He is somebody who is a heel that can get the fans to boo him despite, you know, the hardcore fans wanting to cheer him. He can get us to boo him because he's that good. Mm-hmm. I think you look at his feud with Jericho, it was one of the best feuds of the year. I think he's somebody that, you know, first kind of popped onto my view screen as a WWE guy, you know, because I'd known about his stuff on the Indies and in ROH, but in terms of being a WWE performer, he first kind of popped to me when he took on John Cena in the U.S. Open Challenge. And I was like, okay, he's in there toe-to-toe with Cena. He looks credible. This guy's going to be good. And he has been good. But he hasn't been good for long. And that's where I kind of dock points.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think if this were, you know, year 6 or 7 of Kevin Owens instead of year 3, he would be top 50 for sure for me, maybe even top 30 or top 25, because I think he's that good. But I think his lack of longevity, plus he's had some weird matches here and there, and you and I have talked about it on the main event, Scotty, like where you would think that he would have like surefire five-star classics with dudes, they just haven't meshed in the ring. And I'm particularly thinking of the AJ Styles matches, mm-hmm. which were average by the standards of AJ Styles and Kevin Owens. So I think he's to me, somebody that is reliable. You can put him in there with just about anybody. I enjoyed his match with Shane McMahon, of all people. So I think Kevin Owens is somebody that, as time goes on, if he continues to perform at this level, he'll be one of the all-time greats. But for now, I think 80 is as high as I can put him personally.
Longevity was something I had to dock a lot of guys on. Thus, that's why I didn't have AJ Styles on. If this was year 7 of AJ Styles in the WWE, yeah, he'd probably be in my top 10. And the same thing with Kevin Owens. I have 3 Kevin Owens t-shirts, so I have no issues with him whatsoever. He's one of my favorite guys. But again, for me, the window's just too small to be out of 100 guys. But again, yeah, 3 years from now, if Placement Nation decides to do this again, he would definitely probably be in my top 50 if he keeps moving at this pace. So I like that. That's a good pick. Number 80, Kevin Owens friend, brother Nate. I had King Kong Bundy. Placementnation.com cumulative top 100. Its number 80 was a guy you already had and a guy I will have. The Rock, Don Morocco. Was number 80 on the placementnation.com fan ballot list.
I'm actually kind of surprised by that, Scotty. I'm a little bit surprised because I did not think that, you know, one of the crazy things about the polling is the demographics. And I know we've got a lot of older cats like you and myself, but there's also a strong contingent of new school fans. And I didn't think they'd give The Rock that much love.
I didn't either. Well, he was on 56 ballots, so that's around half. He was voted as high as 14 and placed as low as 100. So 14, somebody had him at.
I'm a Don Morocco fan, and even I think that's a bit high.
I know that's crazy, but you had him at you had him at 100. That's you. There's you. And I have him higher than that. No, I don't have him at 14, but I have it pretty good too. So all right, brother Nate, you're number 79.
Yes, number 79 is a person that. And there's a lot of these type of guys and girls on this list, people that I personally am not the hugest fan of, but if I look at them objectively, I can see their merit and I can see that they deserve a place on the list. And this guy falls squarely into that category. And he is somebody, Scotty, that, mm-hmm. that, you know, doesn't really jump out off the screen. I was trying to go for a cute segue here, but...
That's all right. I try that all the time and fail.
Now I feel like T'Challa, when he had to drink the potion that took away the heart-shaped herb powers, and I'm just sitting there like, I don't know what to do. But my number 79 is a guy that's a 3-time WWE champ, 2-time U.S. champ, and, you know, he's got a lot of accolades, a lot of accomplishments, but I just don't like him. And that's Sheamus.
Wow.
Sheamus is a guy, Scotty, again, he's got everything that you would want, but for whatever reason, it doesn't work for me personally. Like, he's a big dude that can work. He's solid in the ring. He's not great, but he's good. In terms of his character work and his mic work, again, I don't think he's great, but I think he's really good. You know, he's won the King of the Ring, won Money in the Bank, won the Royal Rumble. He's a really good heel. I don't think he's as good a babyface as some people may think. But for whatever reason, I just couldn't get into Sheamus. And I think part of it's probably just a prejudice in my mind of thinking he was handed too much too soon. Because mm-hmm. this dude came in off the bat and, you know, punked out John Cena. And, you know, part of me felt like, okay, yeah, it feels like, you know, because you're Triple H's boy, you're getting this preferential treatment. But I can't hold that against Sheamus. You know, he was given a spot, and he has performed in it. So I think Sheamus is somebody that will get a lot of points due to being solid in the ring and also having some longevity. But he's just not somebody that, you know, kind of jumps off the page to me. If I'm looking at who's a guy that's going to crack my top 50, Sheamus isn't going to be one of those dudes. But I did feel he deserved a place on the list, Scotty.
I like Sheamus. In fact, I'm pretty sure I have him higher. Well, obviously I do because I haven't mentioned him yet. So I believe I have him higher. So I'm going to give a lot of love to Sheamus. I think he's got an incredible resume, and he's kind of been one of the glues of the last, you know, 10 years of the company. So I think he deserves a boatload of credit, to be quite honest with you, more than some people think. And he's a serviceable guy, serviceable worker. I've always had respect
I like the tag stuff that he lately with him and Cesaro. I think that's a really good use of two guys who, like, Sheamus is weird because I think he's overrated and underrated at the same time, if that makes sense. I think, like, you know, if you read the list of accolades like I just did, it feels like that's a little too much to be given to Sheamus. But then when you look at him in the ring, I don't think he gets a lot of credit for being as good in the ring as he is by a lot of the fans.
Yeah, no, I think he gets disrespected a lot as well, because of his longevity and because of his consistency. His time in WWE, and obviously the resume speaks for itself.
That's a good word. I don't think he's ever been spectacular, but he's always been really good.
He has been very good, and we'll see if he's on the I think he's on the. I have a feeling he'll be on the great on the cumulative list that is posted on PlaceToBeNation.com. We'll see. My number 79 is a guy that a lot of people may not be fans of backstage, but. You know, he's had his great run as a tag team wrestler. He's worked his way through multiple eras of the business and multiple eras of the company. And he's been around for a while. And he was a pretty good announcer. But now he has officially walked away from the company, which is fine. But he continued the trend of great automobile entrances. My number 79 is former WWE champion John Bradshaw Layfield, JBL. I like JBL. I liked him when he was Justin Hawk Bradshaw. I liked him in the Acolytes. I liked him in the APA. A consistent power guy. Yeah, he was a, you know, his reputation backstage. His reputation backstage is less than stellar, but we don't grade that. But he was always a serviceable, good heel, a good bully, and I think his champion reign took a while to get going, but I felt like by the end of 04, the beginning of 05, he was finally being liked, and I think he worked hard to try and get over. A lot of people think he's a lot like Roman Reigns in the sense that he should have won other stuff before becoming champion. But at the time, things were a little different than they were back then, and SmackDown kind of needed a good heel, and you know there were Eddie issues apparently. So this was a good moment for JBL to take the spot. And again, I think by the time he got to early 2005, he was finally getting over. And then by the time he really was coming over as a great heel, he lost to John Cena. So, but he was a great announcer for a while. Then his announcing skills kind of deteriorated a bit. But I think he's a guy who deserves to be in the top 100 because of his longevity through multiple eras, and is one of the best tag team wrestlers of all time, and really one of the greatest heels in the history of WWE. So that's my number 79.
I have no problem with JBL. Spoiler alert: he's going to be on my list. I think. You know, I'm not going to go deep into it because I've got plenty to say about JBL, but the way he went from what could have been this mid-card character to being one of the better heels on SmackDown, I thought it was great. And I also give him a lot of credit for being able to do racial comedy that works.
Okay.
Because we've seen a lot of racial, and I don't really want to go as far as comedy, but racial angles or gimmicks that work. Because we've seen a lot of racial gimmicks in the WWE that have been less than stellar, Scott.
Right. No, absolutely. Yes.
But I think the stuff with him and Eddie, where he was really kind of imbibing that super conservative, rich, isolationist, I don't want these Mexicans in my country character, I thought both he and Eddie played their parts really well. And that was an instance of me, you know, WWE kind of using this racial tinge to their storytelling that actually worked. And a lot of that credit, I think, has to go to JBL's performance.
I agree as well. And I think it helped the storylines work. And it was done a little more tastefully, I suppose, than probably in other scenarios. So, all right. The number 79 on the cumulative ballot list on PlaceBeNation.com, I don't think I have this guy. I'm not sure if you do. He was on 78 ballots. Not bad. He was as high as 30 and as low as 100. Number 79 is Earthquake. I don't think I have Earthquake.
I did not have Earthquake on my list, but I mean, that's an interesting choice.
Did I have Earthquake on my list? We will see. Let's go to my number 78.
Like I said, we are getting older. So, like, I know there's a guy that we'll talk about this week that I did not have, like, I thought I didn't have on my list. And so I was very critical of said person. But in a couple picks, I'm going to have to eat a little crow on that guy.
Yeah, I mean, you know what? Some people think differently, you know, have a different opinion. But my number 78 is Earthquake. That's why I held off on my comments. I was a big Earthquake fan. Great heel. And a good foil for Hogan at a time when they kind of needed one. He ended up being a pretty decent babyface. And I think also he's just one of the most beloved guys in the history of the business because of what happened to him. You know, sadly died of cancer. But just wanted to be in the business, and he stayed in WWE as long as he could till 94, and then he became a great you know, face and heel in WCW. Just a likable guy, just a real likable guy, you know. And it's sad what happened to him. I wish he was still with us, but he's a guy that I've always had a lot of respect for. I thought he was pretty another guy like Bundy who was mobile for a big dude. So he deserves a spot on my list. So I have Earthquake, Shark, Avalanche, whatever disaster you think of, Tsunami. No, I don't think it was a tsunami. At number 78 on my list.
That's cool. That's cool. Because I think in addition to kind of the age breakdowns we'll see on this list, we also will see, I think one of the questions asked when we're submitting our ballots is, what was your favorite era of WWF/WWE? And I think we'll kind of see some of those I don't want to go as far as biases, but those preferences come into play as we see our list play out, because while I respect Earthquake and I think he was really good for what he was, like, that wasn't my, that era wasn't really my jam when it comes to the WWE.
Yeah, well, again, I think it's a question of, you know, what you think of certain guys in certain eras and stuff like that. But I'm kind of proud of myself that I'm in that kind of wheelhouse of where Earthquake was. All right, Brother Nate, you're 78.
Yes, I was gonna say it doesn't happen very often where our picks line up with the nation's picks. So
I know, right? We'll see. I bet you as we get closer, I think that's another case, as we get closer to the top 30 or 20, I'm sure we'll have guys that are very, very close. So,
well, you know, I just talked about, you know, what eras of the WWF/WWE were my jam. And unfortunately, Earthquake's era was not my jam. But this next performer, who might be a controversial selection, was certainly in the era that I would consider my jam. He is probably more apt to the title of glorified stuntman than professional wrestler. And no, this is not Mick Foley I'm talking about. This is Shane O'Mac himself.
Really?
Shane McMahon.
Okay. That's interesting. I'm looking forward to your evidence. This is good.
And so Yeah, my evidence for Shane are twofold. Number one, when we look at, you know, the nuance category and the kind of the characterization, I think Shane has always been, other than Vince, to me, Shane has been the most compelling McMahon as an on-screen character. There's no shade on Stephanie, and of course, no disrespect to Mama Linda with her great acting chops. But to me, like, Shane was all, whether, you know, when he's a heel, you really wanted to see him get his ass kicked. When he was an underdog babyface, you really wanted to see him overcome the odds and beat the monster. And Shane's not a great wrestler. Like, let's not get it twisted. But Shane can go in there and look credible, in part because he's allowed to do things others aren't. So, you know, he does have some advantages there. But I think the guts the guy's shown, particularly when you talk about, you know, matches with people like Kurt Angle or more recent affairs with AJ Styles and even that Kevin Owens match that we talked about earlier, I think Shane McMahon is somebody who would not be like my favorite professional wrestler, but in the category of the WWE and in the world of sports entertainers, I think Shane McMahon's a hell of a sports entertainer. Like, he goes out there and he puts his body on the line. He tells good stories in the ring, and he's somebody that gets you invested in a match. And to me, that's one of the hallmarks of a good wrestler, is somebody that can get you invested, because you can have all the pretty moves and the technical holds in the world, but if I don't give a damn about the outcome of the match, sooner or later, I'm just going to get bored. And so for me, Shane is a guy that always brought me into the match, whether, you know, it was back in the day with the Mean Street Posse or even now where we've got old man Shane with his Jordans on, you know, going out there and jumping off of cages and jumping through tables. So Shane McMahon to me is somebody, like, he's not everybody's cup of tea, but I really dig Shane McMahon, what he's doing now, what he's done throughout his WWF tenure. So Shane McMahon has earned a place in my top 100.
Okay. Interesting. All right. We'll see if I have Shane. It's a good pick. I like that. All right. The Place to Be Nation tallied number 78. Of course, that list on placetobenation.com, created by all of your ballots. This guy was on 71 ballots. He was as high as 7 and as low as 100. He is the longest running reigning Intercontinental Champion of all time, the Honky Tonk Man.
Ooh.
He was 78 on the cumulative placetobenation.com reader ballot list. Interesting. Very interesting on that one. I've always been hot and cold on hockey, but I will save, as you listen to our series, I don't want to tip my scales either way, whether I have him on my list or not. But let's put it this way. I've started to appreciate him more, Nate, as JR and I have been doing the Vintage Vault refreshes and going through all the house shows and everything.
Yeah.
I've appreciated him a little bit more. He worked at least the first half of his reign, from when he won it in June of 87 till right around New Year's. I think the half of 88 that he was champ, I think, was very bad. But I think feuding with Savage motivated him, and wrestling Steamboat motivated him. But I think he got a little lazy, like, you know, the Rumble through WrestleMania 4 and all that, and I think he was due to lose. But I did gain some respect for him a little bit, because I used to hate him when I was a kid, and I hated him for a long time. But my opinion of him changed a little bit as we've been doing our Vintage Vault refreshes, which you can check out on PlaceToBeNation.com and the Place To Be podcast. Okay. Brother Nate, you're up with number 77.
And this is funny, because I had no idea that I did this, Scotty, but, you know, I'm a Christian, and you know,
I as well.
there's certain, you know, numbers that mean things, you know, in the Bible, and if you do your biblical studies, and the number 7 is the number of completion. And so at number 77, mm-hmm. I had no idea that the person I would pick would be somebody who has now completed his WWE journey. But it's also a gentleman that has, for my money, one of the greatest theme songs in the history of this company.
Marcus Corbin?
That is Christian.
Oh,
Marcus Corbin had a great song.
Yes, he did.
But not as great as Christian.
No, not as great as Christian, no.
With the, like, that was one of my favorite. Like, I would, when the old SmackDown video games were out, I would just play the Christian theme song just on a loop, just because it's great, and it really fit the character at the time. And Christian, to me, is somebody much like Matt Hardy, who is overshadowed because his tag team partner was more charismatic and was more athletic. You know, when you're talking about Jeff Hardy with Matt and Edge, of course, with Christian. But I think Christian is somebody who gets underrated by a lot of people. And this guy to me was, he was all around, he was good at everything, but not, you know, not really great at anything. He's kind of Jeff Jarrett-ish in that way.
Right.
But I thought Christian, particularly when he was a heel, he was an effective heel. He had charisma. I thought that, you know, he's somebody that was excellent as a tag team worker. Of course, you know, he's got 9 tag team title reigns. He's a Triple Crown winner and a Grand Slam winner. And I thought he could have been, had they been booked properly and had this entire roster or this brand been booked properly, I think he could have been the key to making ECW something, or at least more than it was. But that didn't happen. And, you know, so his ECW title reigns are kind of meaningless, but they happened. And I think Christian is a guy that a lot of fans got behind towards the latter stages of his career. And every time he kind of came back from his sabbaticals, you could see the connection to the crowd. And Christian to me was a guy that whether you're talking about those ladder matches or whether you're talking about, you know, some of those Money in the Bank matches, Christian's a dude that always was there to do business and do work. And so, yeah, Captain Charisma gets a spot at number 77 on my list for all the peeps out there.
A lot of peeps. And I like that pick. Again, I won't tip my hand if I have him on my list or not. But if I do, he's probably, obviously, he's considerably higher. It's just tough for me to look at my list the way I have the so I'm doing more of a. I don't want to look too far ahead, but let me see. Let me see where I have. Do I have him? Let's see. Oh, I do have him. I have him considerably higher than you. Interesting.
Ooh, okay, number one. I see.
Number one. Yeah. I'm the head peep. My number 77 is a guy that. You will be very proud of that I have, because we all need accountants, I think, in our promotions. And he was the proudest European champion from Helsinki, Finland, in the history of the company. My number 77, D'Lo Brown.
Yes,
This one's questionable. I'm sure a lot of people are wondering why, but I wanted to give a lot of credit to guys who pretty much had either zero wrestling ability or limited and didn't even look like a wrestler. And here's a guy who worked his tail off, became a solid worker in the ring, ended up being a pretty good character through a time when the mid-card in the Attitude Era was pretty thin in the talent department. Pretty much all characters, you know, a lot of sizzle and not much steak. I think D'Lo's one of those memorable guys, you know what I mean? And he's a guy that I think... deserves a lot of credit for carrying some things, you know, during the middle of the Attitude Era, such as being in the Nation, being the European champion, you know, having the creating the stuff like coming from all the different places. And he had one of my favorite pay-per-view openers of all time during the Attitude Era when he fought Val Venus at SummerSlam 98.
Yeah.
One of my personal kind of guilty pleasure favorite matches. And, you know, he had the stuff with Mark Henry and the stuff with... And he was like Mark Henry's like running buddy and kind of his like keeper. I thought it was a great character, and I think he deserves he deserved a spot on my list. Now people are like, you don't have AJ Styles, but you have him. Yeah, I don't have AJ Styles, and I have him. So there you go. So
yeah, D'Lo was solid, man. Like, I think D'Lo was somebody that connected with the audience. He's a memorable character from that time period. Had some really cool theme songs. And I think, you know, had the unfortunate incident with Draws not happened, he probably would have gone on. I'm not going to, you know, go crazy and say he would have been a main event guy, but I think he would have had a much more illustrious, you know, mid-card career going forward.
Yeah, I think so, too. All right, so those are our 77. The cumulative ballot number 77 from the official readers list on placementnation.com kind of blew me away. I definitely do not have this guy on my list at all. He was on 73 ballots. He was as high as 17 and as low as 99. You ready for this? No, the number 77, Marty Jannetty.
Wow.
Yeah. That's about what I say, too. Not even close. Not even close. But hey, you know what?
Is Marty voting?
Marty was the one that put himself at 17, apparently, but no. Yeah, I was kind of blown away. I'm not going to lie when I saw that. That was a bit much. But hey, you know what? Like I said, everybody's entitled to their opinions. I didn't have AJ Styles, and somebody had Marty Jannetty at 17. So there you go.
Like Dave Chappelle said, some people like cucumbers better pickled.
Better pickled. All right. My number 76 is probably one of the a new guy. Again, I think, you know, his longevity's a little longer, and I think he's been a good face and a good heel. And I think he's one of the more unheralded in-ring workers. I think he's gotten better in the ring over the last couple of years. My number 76, the Architect, Seth Rollins. I think he's the most pure talented of the Shield. Yeah. I love Roman Reigns, and I think Roman's a great wrestler. I think Seth Rollins is a better wrestler. But Roman has more things overall, more intangibles than Seth does. However, Seth is a great worker. He's a great heel. I think he's a pretty decent babyface. And he's an anchor guy on this roster. Now, some people give him crap. He injured, you know, Finn Balor and all that, but with that dumb, you know, powerbomb move, although I think Finn Balor needs to take about 2% of the blame for that. Yeah, I think that...
We can overlook him hurting that national treasure, that man known as Sting.
Yes, well, that too, but Sting was fairly fragile to begin with. we got to question that, anyway, Nate. Anyway, I think this is a good... I think Seth belongs on the list, and I think if we do this again in three or four years, I think he'll be even higher. I think he's a guy that could be a rock for this company because he works so hard at what he does, and... I think he's the most reliable match for match of the three guys in the Shield. Roman can have a stinker. He hasn't really had one yet, but he could. And I think Seth can work with more guys than Roman can. But I have Roman higher on my list for other reasons. But anyway, that's who I have. My number 76 is Seth Rollins.
Yeah, Seth's good. Like we saw a couple weeks ago with that gauntlet match. Like, Seth is a guy that can go in there and go. My only hesitance for him going forward would be health, because that's really – health and suspect booking at times have been the only things keeping this guy from being a bigger star.
Right. Yep.
So my 76 is another person of the younger generation that I think is going to be a star for years to come. And if we did this list 5 years from now, she would be much higher. But for now, she's my number 76. She's an NXT Divas NXT Women's Champ, former Divas Champ, and a 5-time Women's Champ. And to me, she's the most fully realized female worker on the roster, and that is one Charlotte Flair.
Ah, okay.
And this was one I had to go back and forth with, because when I initially started my list, I was only going to have, you know, maybe 4 women on my list or 5 women on my list, because quite frankly, there's, you know, and this is not, you know, to be sexist or misogynistic or whatever, but there's been a lot of time period in the WWF/WWE where women were an afterthought, or women were the bathroom break match, mm-hmm. or women were just booked as sex objects. And so for a lot of their history, the women are pretty much inconsequential. So I was only going to put 4 or 5 on there. But when I'm starting going down my list and I'm comparing people and I'm refining the list, and I'm like, you know what? For what she's been doing, and, you know, granted she doesn't have the longest tenure in the company, but you could make the argument that she has been one of the people to make the transition from NXT to the main roster the smoothest. You know, she's somebody who I have not really seen go through a hiccup. I think once she had that initial heel turn on Raw, and they paired her with Ric Flair at first, and then she had that great segment where she kicked her father to the curb. Like, she has owned the role. And even now, in a baby, I think she's found a good way to balance kind of that trademark Flair cockiness with being a baby face. Mm-hmm. And I think, man, she, to me, is the ace of the women's division. As much as I love Asuka, and I hope that's a match we get to see, you know, if not this year, early next year, Charlotte and Asuka. But I think, man, she is somebody that is not only great in the ring, She has a full grasp of her character, and mm-hmm. she's marketable. Like, right. she's somebody you can put on ESPN. You can put on the Today Show with Kathy Lee and Hoda. You can put her on Jimmy Fallon. So, to me, Charlotte Flair is the best of the current crop of women. And I think, you know, even though her career is still relatively young, you can make the argument she's one of the best women they've ever had under contract. So, Charlotte's number 76 on my list.
Okay. I have Charlotte, but a little higher. So, I'll save my Charlotte comments. The Place to Be Nation fan list, the cumulative fan list, I definitely don't have this guy. I don't know if you do. He was on 62 ballots. He was as high as 13 and as low as 100. He may not be the only convict on our list either. Ken Patera.
Ooh, wow.
Let's see. Well, I had him at 95. So.
Yeah, I don't think I have him at all.
Yeah, I have him at 95. So my cumulative average is much lower. But he was number 76. And somebody did have him as high as 13, which is interesting. So.
Yeah, I mean, his daughter's a hell of a worker, but Ken did not make my list, unfortunately.
Okay. And I had him at I had him at 95. So. Okay. Number 75.
Yes.
Let's see, whose turn is it? 1 2 3 4 5. Yours, Nate. You're number 75.
All right. Well, there's an old saying, Scotty. Technically it's not an old saying cuz I just made it up.
10 seconds
one
old.
Good, yeah, 10 seconds old. And that saying is, one good woo deserves another. So my 75 is the father of one Charlotte Flair.
Wow.
Nate's boy, Ric Flair.
All right. I like that. Well, you know that I have him on my list. I don't have him. Obviously, if this was greatest of all time, he'd be my number one. But obviously, within the WWE, it's a little different. But great pick. Great pick. Please.
Yeah, this one was kind of like a... I knew I wanted him on my top 100, but where to slot him was the difficult part, because if you look at the entirety of his WWF and WWE runs, it's almost a tale of two careers. Like, you had that great moment in the early run, you know, culminating with that 92 Rumble, that to me is still one of the greatest Rumble performances ever. And then when you kind of look at his second run with the company, he was not as good a worker. He was still great on the mic. You know, Ric Flair is going to be a great talker till the day he's no longer with us. But he wasn't quite what he was in the ring. But even then, I thought he still had value. I thought the tag team with Batista really helped Dave in his progression. I loved, you know, him working with Orton in Triple H and Evolution. I thought the IC title run he had was a good way for him to go out, and it just felt right. And then, you know, to cap it all off, you had that match with HBK that still might be, Scotty, one of the most emotional matches mm-hmm. that I've ever seen take place in the WWE. Like, it's easy to get a wrestling fan to be happy or to be angry, but to get them choked up, that's a different story.
Right.
And, you know, when we had that match with Flair and HBK in 2008, and, you know, the classic iconic moment of, you know, I'm sorry, I love you, super kick. You know, that to me was a great performance by both men. And Rick, like I think we've said, Scotty, if this were an NWA WCW list or an all-time list, Ric Flair is top five at worst.
Right.
But because it's a WWE list, I think this is as high as I could put him. Mm-hmm. But yeah, he had some really cool moments. But unfortunately, the longevity wasn't there, and I feel like that second run he had was more kind of a victory lap, you know, in some instances. So Ric Flair is on my list at number 75, and he had a couple great moments.
Mm-hmm. Oh, he absolutely did. I have Flair slightly higher. Not that much higher, but a little higher. So I'll save my comments. But I mean, I don't have to. As people have known me for 7 years, going back to the Place to Be podcast, pre Place to Be Nation. Everyone knows my feelings on Flair. So I'll hold off my comments. But there's nothing that can be said about it. It's again, WWE is just a little different because he wasn't here for his template is very small for WWE. So. Yeah. My number 75 is another guy that came from WCW. And this is more pretty much from when he arrived, probably for the next, I would say, 6 or 7 years. Another dependable guy who did have some good matches, but more for his stature and his ability to be dependable when needed. Could slide into any storyline. And battled a lot of other, personal issues. My number 75 is the Big Show.
Mm.
Dependable guy. Obviously dealt with weight issues. But, when relied upon from like 99 when he got here to like, probably like 08, he was pretty dependable. And after that, of course, his schedule greatly limited now. He's pretty much a single shot guy. But he's a guy that's the face of the new era. Not the face, but one of the faces from the middle of the Attitude Era through the Ruthless Aggression, et cetera, et cetera. He gave Brock Lesnar decent matches. Obviously, him and Taker have had some good matches. They've had some stinkers, but they had some good matches. He's been a good tag team guy. Just another one of those dependable, reliable guys that WWE's had over the last, 20 years, but mostly from like 99 to 08. He battled the weight issues, left in 06 because he was really in bad shape. Came back looking great, looking nice and trim. Looking trim now. Kind of a good ambassador for the company. Maybe flipping face and heel a little too much, but...
Yeah.
There's a lot of guys in the history of the company that could be blamed in the history of wrestling in general that could be blamed for that. Lex Luger. But...
That'd be a good pod blast to have. Who is the most... inconsistent in their alignment.
Yeah, who's Lex the biggest Luger, flopper? Yeah.
Big Show, Ric Flair, like who is that
Luger
guy?
I know, right? Triple H. So anyway, that's what we have. That's what I have. I have the Big Show at number 75.
All right.
The number 75 on your fan ballot, the cumulative fan ballot on PlaceToBeNation.com. She was on 64 ballots. She got as high as 7 and as low as 97. The boss, Sasha Banks.
Wow.
We'll see if I have Sasha on my list. I like Sasha. I like Sasha a lot.
Yeah, I like Sasha too. She, unfortunately, when I was making my list, comparing her specifically to Charlotte, it's like, I don't think both of you make the list, and if I've got to go at one, to me, Charlotte's had a better main roster run.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so too. But I may add Sasha in a few years if she actually, comes around. And I just get nervous about Sasha because I always feel like she's going to break her neck or break something.
Yeah.
I get scared about that. All right, my number 74, in my opinion, kind of the same reason I have JBL to a certain extent, one of my favorite, actually one of the reasons I have Mr. Fuji. But this guy is higher on the list for that. One of the best tag team wrestlers in the history of the company. He had great theme songs. He had great tights. He was an average singles wrestler, but I think he's more known for his tag wrestling and for being in one of the greatest factions of all time. My number 74, the one, Billy Gunn. I love, he had the greatest tights. The Mr. Ass song was great. The one song was outrageously good. And look, he was one of the greatest tag team wrestlers of all time. Yeah. He won it with Bart. He won it with, Road Dogg. He won it with Chuck. I think he won it with somebody else too. But here's a guy who consistently good as a tag team wrestler. Not a horrendous singles guy. Not a great singles guy. Not a guy they tried 99 to strap the rocket on him and that failed miserably. But you know what? That's fine. A lot of guys aren't meant to be good singles wrestlers, and Billy Gunn's one of them. But he's one of the most dependable, reliable tag team guys in the company's history. And he was there through the lean years in the mid-90s, and then he flourished during the Attitude Era. And again, as a tag team guy, one of the best tag workers in company history. So my 74, the one, Billy Gunn.
I like it. And I'm not going to, you know, make fun of your pick and throw shade at Billy the Gun, because A, that's not nice, Scott, but B, as I've learned this week, and I'm man enough to admit it, you know, sometimes when you make bold claims, it can come back to bite you if you don't have all the facts straight. And I believe on one of our previous shows, I was very strident in my dislike of Terry Funk's WWF run.
Right.
And who do I have now? The one and only Charlie Chainsaw himself, Terry Funk. And I honestly don't, like, Scotty, I don't, it must be, and not to add fuel to the running gag on the message board, but on the Facebook group, but it might be some of that good old NWA bias creeping in. Because I, again, like we talked about when you brought Funk up, it wasn't that Terry Funk was bad. It was just that Funk was diminished. So I think this was more a pick born out of respect for Terry Funk. Cause I love me some Terry Funk, but going back, like, yeah, I'm kind of like, I surprised myself with this pick.
Right. Yeah. No, I love the Funker. I've got him higher on my list, actually. Let me see. I have a terrible memory. Let me see. Did I do the Funker already? Let me see. I did not. So I definitely have the Funker higher on my list. So I'll hold my comments. But I got no issue with the Funker. It was a short-lived run. I know it's not your favorite, and I know a lot of people were disappointed, maybe because they wanted more out of the Funker. But you know, late 80s Terry Funk was, I mean, he never played with a full deck. But professionally, he wasn't playing with a full deck either. And that's why he, you know, didn't last long. We ended up with disgustingly bad Jimmy Jack. But anyway. All right.
Good old Jimmy Jack Funk.
And give me Jimmy Jack Funk. All right. Now, the Place to Be Nation fan ballot, number 74. This guy was on 70 ballots. He was as high as 20, as low as 98. The King, Jerry Lawler. I don't have Lawler on my list at all because I just don't think he wrestled enough matches. I honestly don't. I mean, let's be honest, 90% of his career was as an announcer. So, of course, we all know who had him number 20. I'm surprised he didn't have him at 1. But we won't go there. I definitely don't have him on my list because he just didn't wrestle here. He wrestled maybe, what, 9 matches in 20 years or whatever? He was an announcer. Now, if we did all-time wrestling, yeah, I'd probably have him in my top 50. But we're just talking WWE, and he just didn't do enough for me. My opinion on Lawler.
Yeah, and to me, Lawler's a lot like Funk, you know, where they had their greatest success outside of the WWE. And so, yeah, I thought Lawler was a great heel. I enjoyed his feud with Brett, even though it led to one of the most disgusting matches in the history of the company with Kiss My Foot match.
Oh, I thought you were talking about the match with Piper at King of the Ring 94, because that match was disgusting, too, for different reasons.
Yes. But I think, you know, when I think of Jerry Lawler in this company, yes, I think of him as a wrestler, but primarily, you know, I think he'll best be remembered as that commentator who was so great during the Attitude Era and less great as we got on into modern times.
Exactly. So there was the fan ballots number 74, Mr. Jerry Lawler. Brother Nate, you're 73.
Yes, my person at number 73. You know, a lot of people might say, Scotty, you know, judging by some of our picks that they might disagree with, that, you know, we're not taking this seriously or we don't care enough about this project. But I can tell you, particularly with my pick at number 73, that I give a damn. In fact, I give a Rob Van damn.
Ah, oh my God, it did happen. It did happen. We might as well do this collectively because that's who I have at 73.
Wow.
Wow, I can't believe we did it. I can't believe we pulled it off. Unbelievable. I was wondering when it was going to happen, and I'm actually pretty impressed, Nate, because I'm sure we're going to have guys in our top 20 that are almost exact or within one, but I can't believe it. So we can officially say that at least on one case on this list, Brother Nate and I have the same guy in the same slot. We both have Rob Van Dam at 73. Good. You first, and then I'll go after you.
I mean, just in terms of his in-ring, like, nobody's going to confuse Rob Van Dam with being Ric Flair or Dusty Rhodes on the mic. I don't even know if he was Dustin Rhodes on the mic. But in the ring, Rob Van Dam was always so fun to watch. And, you know, he's when he was at his height, at his heyday, when he was both ECW and WWE champion, I thought that there was nobody in the company that was more fun to watch. You could make the argument that maybe Booker is the only guy from the Invasion that ended up, you know, having a respectable career post-Invasion, at least, you know, to that level. But to me, it's Rob and Booker. Like, those are the only two guys that kind of made it out unscathed. And in fact, their team was one of my favorite tag teams at the time with RVD and Booker. I thought they just worked well together. You know, he's a guy that, you know, he kind of rises to the level of his opponents, because I remember him having some great matches with people like Jeff Hardy, and Shelton Benjamin was another person he had good chemistry with. And then he could kind of have average matches with average people. But I always, man, Rob Van Dam was a guy that I was always impressed with.
Yeah, I just, he's a great worker. You know, a good, I mean, he's put on some incredible matches in WWE. I mean, he dived right into the deep end. Him and Jeff Hardy had those great matches in 2001 during the Invasion. Him and Eddie had that great three-match set in 2002 for the IC belt. He was good. He was a great Intercontinental Champion. He was a great U.S. Champion. I think, no, he didn't win the U.S. title. A great Intercontinental Champion. Again, good tag champion. And he was probably involved in one of the coolest moments in the history of pay-per-view when he won the WWE title from John Cena at One Night Stand 06, even though, it, you know, the awesome Edge spear helped. But everything always helps. In any event.
And you could make the argument at One Night Stand in 05, he wasn't even cleared to wrestle yet, and he was still just, you know, coming out hobbled. He was the most over guy on the show.
Mm. Yeah, he was. And look, when he hobbled out in 99, when he had to forego the ECW TV belt, when clearly he had the belt for like 37 months or something. I mean, he's just one of the most over guys in ECW, but obviously, and at WWE, he was just not, I mean, everybody will argue that he was not a rocket strap ship guy. You know, JR and I had some good debates about RVD when we were doing our vaults back with the 2001 pay-per-views. I know everybody gets pissed at what happened at Unforgiven 02 with Triple H, blah, blah, blah. I get that. But just always a solid worker, always put on great matches, great high flyer. No, his promo skills were not great, but not everybody's is.
Like that's the thing, Scotty. Like, imagine, like, RVD to me is one of the most entertaining guys that I've seen in wrestling. And this dude was not a good talker. Like, imagine if RVD could talk. He might be in the top 10.
I know, right? He probably would be. If he had any kind of stick skills, he'd probably be top 15. Top 10, top 15. I agree with you 100%. So Brother Nate and I both with Rob Van Dam at number 73. Very impressive. I'm impressed by that because it's easy to both have the same two, the same five, the same one, or the same eight. But to have the same 73, I'm impressed. Now, number 73 on the Place to Be Nation fan ballot, that's kind of what I'm calling it now to play it safe. It's not, it's not a staff ballot, it's fan ballot. This guy was on 79 ballots. Again, it was out of 118. He was as high as 24, as low as 100. Dean Ambrose.
Mm.
Dean Ambrose is my least favorite Shield member.
Yes.
So we'll see if he makes my list. Somebody had him at 24. Interesting. It's curious to see where some of these new guys are put as high lists. I'm obviously, and I know I keep bringing it up, but that's the running gag with Chad and I. I'm sure we'll see AJ Styles on the fan ballot, you know, on the fan list, much higher. I'm curious to see who were the lowest person, who someone had at their lowest, having him on their list. Very interested by that, too. All right. Number 72 for me. This is another guy kind of like Billy Gunn, kind of like Big Show, in the sense that here's a dependable guy, great worker in the ring, had some really good moments, not a bad stick worker, but sadly just missed that one thing that could have made him really great. My number 72, Dolph Ziggler.
Mm.
This is one of those guys that's kind of polarizing, you know, and you could go either way on him, but I think he was a great heel. The feud he had in 2000, I guess it would be 2011, with Zack Ryder, that led to Zack Ryder winning the U.S. title in an unprecedented match, and that was when they had that awesome picture with all the young people as champions that everybody likes. But he was really reliable and dependable. His last couple of years have been hit or miss, and obviously he's in a strange place right now, but we'll see where he goes in 2018. But I think that's a guy who, again, in the last 7 or 8 years has been a dependable in-ring worker wherever you put him on the card as a face or a heel. So for dependability for me, that's why I put him on my list, and I have him at 72.
Scotty, did we just become best friends?
No way.
No, I'm just fucking around.
Jesus. Don't do that to me.
I did not have Dolph Ziggler at number 72, although that's a fine choice. I think Dolph is a guy that's always been great in ring. The question around him has been the booking, and that's something that, you know, he can't control. But for me, a guy who I guess you could say is similar to Dolph in the fact that he was as good as he was allowed to be, and the booking might have let him down. In fact, I think the booking did let him down, because this is a guy that I thought had world championship potential, and that is MVP.
I like that pick. I like MVP very much. And I hope he comes back.
Like, what I liked about MVP was he was solid in the ring, but he was really good with his character. And one of the things that I think about as a wrestling fan of color is portrayals and how do you present this character on TV. And I dug how he was this Deion Sanders, Terrell Owens type free agent when he first came in. And it felt like a different spin on your typical black character, you know, that they're either thugs or the preacher gimmick or the savage gimmick or, you know, bland athlete guy. Sorry, Apollo Crews.
He's so bland, he lost his last name. So
yes. But to me, MVP had a character that felt real. Like, it, you could look in the NFL or in the NBA or Major League Baseball and see guys like that. And so I thought MVP had a great grasp on his character. You know, he was somebody that was good on the stick. I thought that there was a time on SmackDown where he was, you know, the number two or three babyface after Triple H and The Undertaker. And the crowd was really getting behind him. I thought he had a great feud and then partnership with Matt Hardy. I thought they played well off of each other.
I thought so too.
And to me, like, MVP is a guy that if the writers knew more what to do with this guy, I think he would have been a much bigger star. Because one of the stories that always makes me laugh is, remember when they did the angle with MVP and Sherry Shepherd?
Yes.
Where she was like his girlfriend. Mm-hmm. And one of the things they wanted to do to keep the story going, I think one of the writers had suggested, was we're going to send MVP and Sherry to the BET Awards, and they're going to present an award. And this will be a good way to kind of keep this story going and also promote us to a different audience. And somebody in the WWE front office had the wisdom to say, no, that's not a good idea. Why would we be interested in going to BET? Those folks wouldn't watch us. And it's just like, the cluelessness. Because I think the folks in that room would have ate that angle up at the award show. And it's just another bit of short-sightedness in terms of the booking that I thought kind of short-circuited this dude's career, who, like, he's still going strong. Like, he had a good run in TNA. He had a good run in New Japan. Like, that to me is one of the things, like, damn. MVP should be one of those guys we look at as, you know, maybe not a top 10 or top 25 guy, but certainly a top 50 guy, had things going right. So that's why he's on my list.
Yeah, I agree about that with MVP. I think he started off, questionable, but then worked his butt off and yeah. and became a great heel, a good baby face, and then just, you know, he just needed a change of scenery.
When he was in there with the right guy, like, I remember some of those matches with Benoit. Like, when he was in there with the right guy, he could go.
I think we'll see him back soon. I don't think he was just involved. I mean, if he wants to wrestle again, I think we'll see him back in WWE in some capacity.
He's going to play more poker?
He's going to definitely play, and he'll invite you and let you stay. Even if you don't have the hot wife being taken away from you by Mark Henry. All right, here is the Place to Be Nation fan ballot number 72. Or fan list number 72. He was on only 53 ballots because this was one of those ones that people waffled on our Facebook group. Only 53 ballots. He was as high as 11 and as low as 100. And this is an interesting debate, Nate, and I'm curious if you – I know I have him on my list. I'm curious if you'll have him on yours. Bobby the Brain Heenan.
Ooh.
I'm going to hold off my comments because I have him on my list a little bit further up. But again, Bobby's one of those interesting situations because he was in the ring enough to matter.
Yeah.
So, you know, and some people probably thought, oh, he was only a manager. So he was only on 53 ballots, but 53 people thought otherwise. So.
Yeah, I believe Bobby's on my list, again, getting old. But I believe Bobby's on my list because, again, like you said, he had the in-ring career. But then he also, like, to me, Bobby is like one of those indelible characters for the company. So, yeah.
So that he was number 72 on the Place to Be Nation cumulative fan list. All right, Brother Nate, let's wrap it up. Your 71.
All right, my 71. We mentioned MVP, and some fans may not know that he had a short-lived tag team in New Japan, which might be a future pick for our New Japan spotlight on the main event.
Mm-hmm.
He had a short-lived tag team that was called Black Dynamite, which is just a fabulous name because it's a great movie.
I like the name. And I didn't know it was a movie.
You've never seen Black Dynamite?
I don't think I have. I like the name, though.
Jai White. It's like a mock blaxploitation movie.
Oh, neat. Except Black Dynamite. Even better.
Yes, and for some reason, John Hader's in that one, too.
Oh, well, there we go. Perfect.
But the team was Black Dynamite. It was MVP. And his tag team partner was a guy that you mentioned on our countdown. And that is one, Shelton Benjamin.
Ah. Well, I have I've already mentioned Shelton on my list. I had him at... I had Shelton at 93. I had Shelton on my list.
Yes.
So, yep.
And you know, I'll echo a lot of the sentiments you had. Like, Shelton was a guy that was not the greatest on the stick, but he was really good in ring. I thought he was an excellent tag team worker, particularly with Charlie Haas. And now, in his kind of second life with the company, I think he and Gable are a really good team.
I agree.
And to me, Shelton Benjamin is a guy that if Shelton Benjamin could talk like MVP, I think there's no way you could have kept him from being a world champion.
Mm-hmm.
Because to me, that's the only thing that held Shelton back.
Mm-hmm.
But that being said, like, he still had a good career, you know. Like I said, he had multiple tag team titles. You know, he's had, you know, some mid-card reigns, and he was a guy that he was never going to be the main eventer, but he was always that next guy down, you know, and he could make a lot of people look really good. So to me, Shelton Benjamin is a guy that, you know, might not make everybody's list, or if he does, he'll be pretty low. But I definitely had to give Shelton some love because he was a guy that was dependable and consistent. And it was very rare to have a bad match from Shelton Benjamin. Like, he didn't always have a fantastic match, but it was very rare that he'd ever have a bad match.
I agree. And if you want to hear my comments on Shelton Benjamin, go to part one of our 10-part series because I had him at number 93. My number 71 is another guy that was this 10 guys I have, mostly I feel like I'm honoring tag team specialists, although this guy had a great singles run as a heel. He was on two different tag teams. One of them did not win the titles. One did. He was a former Intercontinental Champion. And he stood for Law and Order up north.
Mm.
My number 71, the Mountie, Jacques Rougeau.
Yes.
I think Jacques is a tremendous wrestler. He was great in the Rougeaus brothers. He was great as the Mountie. He was great in the Quebecers. He was just great. A good, solid in-ring guy, cut a great promo. He had the crowd going as a heel. Was involved in one of my favorite feuds with Boss Man in 91 that led to him getting put in the Manhattan Clink. just a great overall worker and a guy that deserved to be on the list for me.
Yeah, the Rougeau brothers was such an underrated team, man. Like, I think had they existed today, they would have been getting a lot more fanfare because they were they had character, and of course, you know, when you got the mouth of the South with you, it's hard not to have character, but they were so smooth in the ring. I was a big fan of the Rougeaus and Jacques in particular.
Mm, yeah, so there we go. There's my number 71, Jacques Rougeau. Now, number 71 on the Place to Be Nation fan list. This guy was on 73 ballots. He was as low as, I'm going to go low to, I kept doing high to low, but I'm going to do low to high. He was as low as 96 and as high as 7. Mm. And I know I have this guy considerably higher on my list. The adorable one, Adrian Adonis.
Mm.
I have him, I know for a fact that I have him higher. So he's, I'll shower love to him, no pun intended, later on down the line. I'll shower him with Goodnight Irene. No.
Yes.
So, yeah. So, the number 71 on the Place to Be Nation fan list was Adrian Adonis. So, somebody had him at 7. I'm pretty impressed by that.
Yeah.
So, there you go. So, there you go. There's part 3. Let's do a quick recap of our...
Let's run it back.
All right. My 80 to 71, King Kong Bundy, John Bradshaw Layfield, Earthquake, D'Lo Brown, Seth Rollins, The Big Show, Billy Gunn, Rob Van Dam, Dolph Ziggler, and Jacques Rougeau. Brother Nate?
All right, and I had Kevin Owens, Sheamus, Shane McMahon, Christian, Charlotte Flair, Ric Flair, Terry Funk, RVD, MVP, and at number 71, Shelton Benjamin.
All right. So, there you go. There is part 3 of our what will be a 10-part series. Thanks for listening. Continue listening to our top special series here. And, of course, listen to Place B Nation's main event, which is our regular show that Brother Nate and I do, where we talk everything pro wrestling, WWE, New Japan, TNA, the rest of the indies. We have great guests. We have great analysts. It's just great. So check out Place B Nation's main event, which is on every other week. And check out all the other great GWWOs that are pertaining to this great project. Plenty of other podcasts out there as well. So for Brother Nate, I am Brother Scott. Hope you enjoyed this and more to come. 30 down and 70 to go.
Seems so weird.